Parshas Balak. Balak, who's a king, wants to get at the Jews, hires Bilam, a non-Jewish prophet, to curse the Jews. So the whole parsha, most of the parsha is focused on that. Bilam trying to get that job done. And we know the story with the talking donkeys, and finally gets an opportunity to curse the Jews, and Hashem changes everything they want to say into a bracha. Matovu Olecha Yaakov. What we say in davening is from Bilam. But he failed. Bottom line is he failed. Like any good Rasha, you fail, but you don't give up. So he gave some advice to Balak and says, I got one more trick for you. And this is how you get the Jews. Hashem will protect them if they're always doing the Ratzon Hashem. But if you get them to sin, to do what's against the Ratzon Hashem, then they're open again. And you can get them, if you can get them to sin, then there's no more protection and things can happen to them. Enemies can attack, destroy them, because if you're the protection, you're not there, anything could happen. So he gives the advice to open a flea market. It is all hinted to in the Pasuk. Open a flea market where they sell silk. Apparently the Jews like to wear silk. I don't know if it's just ties, but... So, what was the kunst? What's the trick? Get some older Moabite women to stand outside the tents and show them the okay silk, not such good quality. And the good stuff will be inside the tent. And that's where you have nice-looking women. So, behold, they go to the marketplace. They see the older women. Give them a price. And then they say, if you want the better stuff at cheaper, go inside. So they go inside. And they're met by good-looking women, dressed provocatively. And they say, new, you want some silk? And they say, yeah. So you get into a whole conversation with him. And he goes, oh, but there has to be one thing first. While you're waiting, let's have a little meal. Here's a knife. Sheft an animal in front of the Avodah Zarah, Baal Pa'ar. And we'll sit down and eat. And there's nothing wrong with it because... And we'll explain a little later, everything that the Jews were being offered, there was nothing wrong with. It wasn't usher at that point. It was all mutter. So, and they say, we're all mishpacha anyway, because we all come from a family of Terach, so it's family. It's a family get-together. It's a family reunion. What could be wrong? And every time Klal Yisrael says no. And he says, you want some wine while we're waiting? Once again, we all know today, wine of a non-Jew is usser. Even if they touch it, they pour it, it's usser. But back then it wasn't. In fact, it was because of this story, it became usser. So, they had some wine, but they didn't, they had a little bit of wine, and they told, bow down to the Avodah Zarah. And we'll talk about this later also. They said, no, you can't bow down to an Avodah Zarah. So they, once again, these women were undaunted. So they said, have something to eat. Continue drinking. Sorry for saying, void yourself. Use the restroom. And he said, we can't do that. He goes, yes, he could. And they thought, we'll get back to this also, that they were doing this by going to the bathroom by the Avodah Zarah it's an embarrassment to the Avodah Zarah. It's not serving it, it's embarrassing, it's a bizayon. So he thought that's okay. So after that, everything went wrong. As the Pasuk says, Vayeshev Yisroel b'Shittim, the Jews lived in the place called Shittim, v'yachol ha'am, and the nation began liznos to do lewd activity, elbenos lovam, Moab, with the daughters of Moab. V'tikranu ha'am, they called to the nation, lezuchrei Elohim, to offer sacrifices to their gods, v'yachol ha'am, and the nation ate, v'yishtakvu Elohim, and he bowed down to their gods. As I said, it all wasn't just like that. It was a progression. Eat something, drink something, get comfortable. Then the next pasuk, which is a very important pasuk, Vayitzamed Yisrael Labal Pa'ar. And the Jews were attached. The word Vayitzamed comes from the word Tzadik Mem Dal. You find that when it comes to the laws of Tumah and Tahara, if you have an earthenware keli that has a sealed cap in it, then anything, and then it's in a house or in a room, and there's something in the room, whatever's inside the sealed jar remains tahar because of the seal makes a separation. So it has to be sealed very tightly. Like when you get something, like get the gefilte fish bottles out of the store, you gotta give it a good zetz on the bottom until it pops the little button on top, and then you can open it. That's sealed. So when it says Vayitzamed, I mean the Jews were connected very tightly to them, to the Baal Pa'ar. I mean they couldn't pull themselves away from it. Now if you ask yourself, think about this for a split second, you would think, in Avodah Zarah that served in such a disgusting and despicable way, how can you get attached to something like that? So much so that 175,000 people died because of it. So, if it's a beautiful Avodah Zarah, ornate, you can understand that you're drawn to it, but this is something that you use in the bathroom too. And you're so enamored with it that you can't draw yourself away from it. It's like a porta potty. You know, I can't leave the porta potty. I can't go. It's just so beautiful. I'd rather stay in here for the rest of my life. And it says, Vayicha af Hashem v'Yisroel, and Hashem got really angry at them. And the Magefa started, and that's where we get the whole story of Pinchas, which is a continuation next week. So the question is, how can the people do this? Remember, and we're not just talking about regular people, we're talking about the generation that left Mitzrayim, went through Kriyas Yamsuf, Matan Torah, they saw everything firsthand. And now, with such a high level of attachment to Hashem, now they're turning their back on God and turning themselves to a porta potty and worshiping that instead. Sounds pretty absurd. So what was the Baal Pa'ar that made it so enjoyable for them? So if you just say on a superficial level, it sounds ridiculous. But if you get the explanation of what the Baal Pa'ar understood or symbolized, it makes a little bit more sense. So the first commentary I want to explain is Rav Hirsch. Hirsch explains that we all know that we are made up of two separate parts. The Behema part of us, that's the Guf, and the Neshama part of us, that's the Ruchnius. So, and we have this constant battle. Guf versus Neshama. Ruchnius versus Gashmius. So the Baal Pa'ar, the Avodah Zarah symbolized the total subservience to the Behema part of us, as symbolized by the most, you know, shameful act that we're always, when it comes to tznius or anything, when it comes to restroom, we're all very quiet about it, you know, tznius about it. Here, we're going to go to the other side and just indulge in any type of Behema Dika act. and turn ourselves away from the ruchnis. We're just going to focus on the gashmis of life. Because if you can do this and make an avodah zarah out of it, the next avodah zarah will be going to every single restaurant in the world. I'm just enjoying every single physical delight there is. And not feeling bad about it. That's worshiping a baal par. Just going all the way to the behemoth part of our lives and just saying, that's the ikar, that's the main part. The neshama is the tafel. And once again, does that mean we should all become hermits and fast for the rest of our lives? No, it just means live a regular life, use the gashmis that we've been blessed with, but just remember that's not the ikar, it's the tafel, it's the secondary part of our life. Everything that we use in the gashmis is there to help us in our ruchnis, and on a higher plane to elevate the gashmis so that itself becomes a ruchnis part also. But if your whole focus is eating, drinking, and be merry, and there's no room for the ruchnis, that's the baal par. It'll go so far that you do the most disgusting acts and you'd be proud of it because I'm a behemoth. I think according to Rav Hirsch, he knocks evolution in this way. Like he's going back to the evolution against Darwin. So he's saying if all we are is glorified animals, that's what the baal par symbolizes. That's all we are, is behemoths. Just that we can walk and we can talk, we can do things on a higher plane than an animal. Otherwise, what's the difference? So that's Rav Hirsch. The next commentary is from the Sam Derech, is from the Mashgiach of Chevron Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. He was in there a few years ago. So he has a sefer on Chumash, primarily working on the works of the Ramban, explaining them. And he has a whole piece on the Baal Pa'ar. And he asks the same question. How can it be? Let me just say it here. With standing here 40 years, they've been sitting and learning Torah, Yom and Vilayel, day and night, based Medrash of Moshe, Rabbeinu, B'tzoch Anani HaKavod, in the cloud of glory, Bachlu Lechem Abim, and they're eating man, Yishosum Be'er Shom Miriam, and they're drinking from the water of the well of Miriam, and then all of a sudden, and it's Avodah Zarah, Baal Par. Now they attach themselves to the Avodah Zarah, Baal Par. Hayitachin, is it possible, Shebnei Dor Dea, that this nation of revelation, Shebegodo Shlimosim, in the grace level perfection, Hayikol Chetzam Shukasam, Acharach LeKevras Hashem Yisbar, with their whole desire and drive was to get close to God. Hagil LeMatzav Zeh, they've gone to this level, by Arayos, Avodah Zarah, that they now stumbled with Arayos and Avodah Zarah, it's Maha. I'm totally bewildered by that. How is it possible? Just put on the table, so you don't have to hold it. Thank you. So, he explains from this story that we learn a very important level, not a level, a lesson, a fundamental lesson for our everyday lives. And it doesn't have to be just in our service of God, even though that's the primary take on it. But everything that we do, it comes to habits, addictions, it's all tied into one thing. And I think he doesn't say it, but I think it really be summed up by the slippery slope. Once you start something, the slippery slope starts bringing you down. And he explains like this. At the beginning of the medrash that I broke, that I taught, it says that they wanted some silk garments. So they took a walk. They took a tiyul. They left the Anani HaKavod. They left the comfort of being home. And they went out. Same thing we see with Dina. She also took a tiyul. She left the family of Yaakov, and look what happened. She was kidnapped. So they went out. Now, you say, what's wrong with taking a walk? We all take walks. Answer is, yes, it's mutter, but should they have done it? No. But once you do, you break out a little, then the slippery slope takes over, and then you go to the next thing. And then who are they talking to at the bazaar? The older ladies. And you say, what's wrong with talking to the older ladies? You know, what's going to happen then? I understand if you're talking to the younger generation, when you're talking to the older generation, no offense. It's just, what's wrong with that? You're right, there's nothing wrong with it, but that's the next step. The next step is you go in the tent. And once you're in the tent, God knows what could happen. Same thing with our own things. It's hard to explain to the younger generation, because we talk a lot of times from experience of our own mistakes, and they think that they're invincible, that it will never happen to him or to them. I can do it, it's no problem. For example, let's say you tell a person who's holding a cigarette. He said, what do you do? I'm smoking. You ever smoked before? No. Don't start. Why? Because you never know. Oh, everyone else, you know, I know. I'll never continue. I'll smoke one cigarette and that's it. I'm okay with that. That's what the guy who smokes two packs said also 30 years ago. And 40 cigarettes a day later, for a few years. In fact, said here on TheH.com about smoking. It's easier to prevent bad habits than to break them. Thank you. She's my producer. Okay, so what happens? You take the first puff. What do you usually do after the first puff? You cough. Why? Because the body is rejecting the poison. That was enough for me to stop. So the body is telling you it's not going to work inside the body. The body's coughing it out. So if you're persistent, you take a second puff, and what happens? You cough. If you're persistent, you take a third time, cough maybe a little less. Until finally you get it through the cigarette 7 minutes later, you're not coughing. The person says to me, see, it's not affecting me. I'm not coughing anymore. Now you tell it to a person who's an addicted smoker who never coughs. He'd tell you, I'm in perfect health. Look, my body enjoys it. It's not coughing it out. The answer is because your body has become numb to it. It's got desensitized to the smoke. In fact, not only does it not care about it, it craves it now. When a person does an Avera, step by step, getting into that slippery slope, at the very beginning you might feel that little tinge of regret. But if you do one thing after another, you can't say, since I don't feel any guilt, that means it's okay. No, it just means that you've become too desensitized to the Avera and the impressions that it makes on your neshama and on your life. And that's what the Samdarcha is saying. Their mistake was that they took a walk. And they were not able to see, where is this walk going to take me? Not in a literal sense, but in a spiritual sense. Is it good to leave? Is it good to take a walk? Is it good to talk to these women? Is it good to go inside the tent? That's the first thing that he says. That you have to be very careful. Who's the Chacham? One who can predict the future. Who can see ahead and say, where are my steps going to really lead me? That's the fork in the road. When you take the wrong road, it doesn't look like you made the mistake yet. It's only maybe in a mile you realize you're not where you're supposed to be, and there's no shortcut to get to the other side. You have to walk back a mile and then walk another mile just to be where you were supposed to be. Now you're probably like an hour behind schedule. That's if you actually figured out you were going the wrong way. Happened to me on the metro once. Coming back from D.C., got on the right color, but the wrong way. But after two stops, I realized this is not the right place. So now I had to go get back to the original station, then get there on the right train going the right way, and now I'm going in the right direction. But you have to be able to figure that out as soon as you can, so you don't find yourself totally lost. Here, being lost means lost Yiddishkeit-wise, direction and life-wise. It all starts with one simple mistake. Sometimes it's just a simple step that puts you in the wrong direction, and then the rest is just ketchup. It's interesting that the place where this is happening is called Shittim. I think the Slonimer Rebbe says that Shittim comes from the word shtus. Shtus means... Shtus, craziness. The Gemara says, a person only does an Avera, Ella nechnas bo ruach shtus. A spirit of craziness entered him. And I explained that. I call it temporary insanity. It's not craziness, you're just temporarily insane. Meaning, the example I give is, which people, physical people, love you the most in this world? Parents. Parents. So now you do something, you know you have a test coming up, and if you don't study for it, you're going to fail, and you know you have to have the test signed, and you know, when you bring that test home to be signed, you can imagine your parents' look of disappointment, or not anger, but disappointment. And they're going to ask you, they're going to grill you, you have to be ready to answer the questions. When did you know about the test? Last week. So you knew a week before, you had a week to study? Yes. When did you start studying? On the way to school. If you knew you had a week to study, why did you start studying 10 minutes before the test? I don't know. See what happens? Yes. Now, can you sign? You just want to get it signed, get it over with, put it in your backpack, bring it to school, and forget about it. Now, if you know from before your parents are going to be disappointed, and you know that they're the ones who love you the most, why in the world would you do anything that's going to disappoint them? The answer is, ruach shtus, it's temporary insanity. I'm not thinking straight. What does temporary insanity mean? That rational thinking left. Now you're just thinking like a little kid with no rational thought. That's insanity. That's shtus. So at that moment, there was a ruach shtus in Shittim for the Jewish people. Nechnas bo ruach shtus. There was a temporary insanity, because if you ask the 175,000 people, what in the world are you doing? And you ask them afterwards, you say, I don't know. I don't know what happened. It was over before I realized. And the Sumdarf explains also, says there's a medrash that, you know, maybe this is the expression, it's in the water, that there's some places, there are places that the teva of the place leans itself to a certain type of behavior. He says here, Yesh, he says, I think he's quoting this, Yesh Mainos, there are spings from Megalum Gevorim that can raise strong people. Yesh Megalum Chaloshim, there are people who can raise, the springs that raise weaker people, weaker disposition. Yesh Noim, those who can, the water can make people look beautiful. Yesh Mechuorim, the water can make people look uglier. Yesh Tznuim, the water that can make people to be tznuus, modest. Yesh Shtufim Zima, then they have people, the water just gets into their system and they become lewd. So it's in the water. Here's the source word. So he says the spring in Shittim caused the lewdness, the behavior of lewdness, the avira, the atmosphere was from the water. And he says, he quotes a pasuk from Yoel, that Hashem was going to dry up the well. Because he realized that the well was not good for that area. So that behavior just wouldn't continue, anyone living in Shittim. So he dried it up. So that's about Shittim. It created insanity from the water. So 175,000 people died because these people did not recognize the course that they were on and where they were going and where they were going to and the averus that was going to happen to them. And that's why also by a nazir, I think as we know, a nazir is a person who takes upon himself tonight a neder, a vow that for the least amount of time of 30 days he will abstain from getting haircuts, drinking wine, and becoming Tommy Mace. All those distractions will, if you take it away, will help him focus more on his ruchnius and get closer to God. So, the Gemara says in Shabbos that if you see a Nazir walking near a vineyard, you tell him, go around. Don't walk in the vineyard and just hold yourself back. Go around. Go around, even though the road will be longer, your trip will be longer, it will take you more time. But it's better to do that than to walk down the vineyard where the temptation is there. You have to recognize, once again, as he says, if you walk down certain places and you know there's going to be a nisayon popping up right in front of you, go a different way. Yes, it could be inconvenient. Yes, it could take you extra money. But what are you gaining and what are you losing if you take the real way? If you do the aver, you're losing a lot. But what are you gaining if you go the other way? You're gaining the scar of overcoming that Yetzirah. How are you getting the scar? By not even giving the Yetzirah an opportunity to tempt you. And that's in an everyday life. You know, I'm not sure exactly the supermarket. I haven't been in a supermarket in months. So I'm not sure about what every checkout aisle, what magazines are there. But we all know that there's one aisle in every store that's the magazine aisle. So if you know that there's certain magazines on that section, some of them are not appropriate. So even though what you need is at the end of this aisle, go through a different aisle. Where all you're going to read at the back of the boxes of the cereals. Okay, so you'll see that instead. But you're saving yourself the nisayon. It's better to walk the other way than to walk this way while walking down next to the magazines. That's the point of the Sumder. If you could just take yourself out of a potential nisayon, that's better than getting into a nisayon and overcoming it. Because overcoming it is not a given. Now the last explanation, is from Chaim Shmulevitz. He's saying this, I believe, in 1972, which would be 3-4 years after Woodstock and a few years after the 60s. I think that's important to put that in the context. And he asks all the other questions of, how can it be that they do these things so disgusting? Then he asks another question. It says in a different parasha, Lo sasifu al hadavar asher anochi mitzaveh eskan lo sigur mimeno. There's an avera in the Torah with any mitzvah not to add on to it and not to detract from it. You don't have to do two lulavim. One is enough. If you need three aravas, three hadasim, don't do two. Don't add, don't subtract. Lishmar es mitzvos Hashem elokeichem, guard and keep the mitzvos of Hashem your God, Asher anochi mitzaveh eskan, which I commanded you. Einecham, and here's the kicker at the end of the pasuk, because einecham haraz, your eyes already saw with faneho in front before you. But Hashem did to those people worse than the Baal Pa'ar. Ki koha ish asher holach akrei Baal Pa'ar, because whoever went after the Baal Pa'ar, ishmidu Hashem elokecha mikirbech, Hashem wiped them out from among you. So Reb Chaim asked the question, what's the reason of the juxtaposition of the avera of don't add to a mitzvah, don't subtract to a mitzvah? Because you remember what happened to Baal Pa'ar? Why does one thing have to do with the other? When was Avodah Zarah? This is a totally separate thing. I want to read the words, and I know it might be a little hard to keep up with. But I think the words are beautiful and explains perfectly. Bir advarim hu. The explanation is from Hus Avodah Zarah Shel Pa'ar. The whole essence of the Avodah Zarah of Pa'ar is Pritzas Kol Gedarim, is the breaking down of all fences, all boundaries. Sorry, Af Ovdei Avodah Zarah Gedurim Hei. Because even if you're worshiping Avodah Zorah, there are rules and regulations. So this one, the Baal Pa'ar, the rules and regulations were that there are no rules and regulations. And the obligation was to honor the Avodah Zorah, that's by all other Avodah Zorah. Luma Zos, in contradistinction to this, of the Baal Pa'ar, Ein Lem Shul Gedorim, there are no boundaries. Af Es Alilim Bizul Ad Lofer, even if you embarrassed the Avodah Zorah from top to bottom, that's fine. Ein L'datim Shum Erech Shukhaivim Chabdo L'Aricho, because there's no real value to it that you have to honor it with. It's like if you have something that's really honorable, you're not going to do something disgusting to dirty it up. Only something that you think has no value would you do such a despicable thing to. Disgusting. Yosmikach, Himtiu Elo Shuko Avodasar Bevizuyov. The whole Avodah Zorah, the whole purpose was to be Mevazir. Kho Kamash Mevazin also. Yosef, and the more that you can embarrass it, the more you can dirty it up, geschmack. Better. In fact, he quotes a Gemara that someone goes, I never saw anyone worship this Avodah Zorah as he did. The Gemara explains how disgusting what the acts he did in front of the Avodah Zorah. And you go, like Rosh Shiva, look what he was mechadish in this Avodah Zorah. And he gets a grace of Yishkayach, Kiddush, and Hidda's honor. He reached the pinnacle of serving the Avodah Zorah just by being as low and disgusting. And he now gets into the context of the times he's speaking. We move on. Even though we don't have this Avodah Zorah today, but the philosophy of the Avodah Zorah, we understand very well the draw of this Avodah Zorah, this philosophy. Because what does it mean? Total hefkeres, you can do whatever you want. No rules, no disciplines, no boundaries, no limits. It's whatever you want. There's nothing that's going to stop you. There's no boundary that's ever going to limit you. For sure, this is a great pull. Because even in our days, this hashkafah is in the world. Remember, he's after the 60s. He's talking 3 years after the Sikhis in Woodstock. So he's saying that this Kashkof of Baal Pa'ar is in the world now. We're living in a world of Pa'ar. Everything goes. Why do I have to listen to a parent? I'm my own man. It's my life, to quote Billy Joel. So I don't have to listen to you. I don't need any rules and regulations. That's Baal Pa'ar. If you really think you can wake up in the morning and do whatever you want, you are worshipping Baal Pa'ar in your own way. And we all know, we all need rules and regulations. That's the cheres, that's the freedom that the Torah gave us. We left the cheres of Mitzrayim, not to be free independently, we can do whatever we want. How many people are bored a few days after vacation, a few days into vacation? If there's no structure, you go crazy. Rules and regulation gives any person structure. People who retire, they don't know what to do themselves. Rabbi Lion would say, there's only so many times you can go fishing, go bowling, and clip coupons. What else are you going to do? You need a structure, so a lot of people will take another job. You work 30 years just to retire. Yeah, because working is quote-unquote fun, and you're making money. There's structure. The hardest part of recuperating from my health issues was waking up with nothing to do. So eventually I was able to get up, and then in Baruch Hashem I was able to get into classroom 4 days a week. Otherwise you wake up, what am I getting up for? So you get up at 10 and 11. Okay. You piddle around the house. Do things to pretend to keep yourself busy. But you're really not busy. You're not doing anything. You need a structure. We all need a structure. That's what the Torah gives us. The Torah gives us a real structure to our life. From the moment we woke up, Moldani, Negavasar, Davening, even the Mishnah Berurah, the Shulchan Aruch says, before you go to work, learn a little, go to work, Mincha in the middle of the day, work some more, come home, learn, Maariv. There's a structure. All the halachas that go with us is to help us structured, like in the military. They're structured people. I remember in college, I was sitting next to this ex-Marine. He's like Marine-ish looking. And my friend and I from Yeshiva were schmoozing, a nice guy. He said, ex-Marine, he said, I'll never do it again. But I'm happy I did it. I'm happy I did it. Because it gave him a structure, he said. Gave me a structure in life. So all people who want to break the structure, that's Baal Pa'ar. If they want to be limitless and lawless, that's Baal Pa'ar. That's the hashkafa of, I can do whatever I want. That's not going to get you anywhere in life. If you kind of, you think you're hired and the boss says, come at 9, I'm going to come at 11. How long do you think you're going to be working at that institution? Not long. In our own lives, we need the structure. How many times have you been looking for that bill that I had to pay 3 weeks ago? Because I don't know where I put it. We need a structure in that also. That's Baal Pa'ar. And I think I want to say this one thing. To tell you how structured, how important it is. You all know the Jews were on the 49th level of Tumah and Mitzrayim. So why were they redeemed? What did they have going for themselves that they were redeemed? Hint 3. What? They were Yanko, they dressed like Yanko, and they talked like Yanko. Isn't that a principle? Isn't that a standard that they stood up for? Everything else? Okay, I'm falling. But if you don't have that one thing that you can anchor yourself to something stronger, to the boat that you're floating away from, then you could be saved because you still had some sort of standard and structure to your life. I'm going to be Yanko. I'm not going to become Jack or whatever. I'm going to be Yanko. I'm going to talk like Yanko. I'll dress like Yanko. That's a standard. I'm just thinking if I should say what I want to say. We want to get onto the internet. So. Now, let's skip it. Wait, hold on. Good. Okay. Because I think what the Sam Derech and Chaim Shmuel are really the same thing. It's all about self-control. And understanding what to do, what not to do, where to start, what not to start with. It's always important. You know, Balimus always talk about this also. Doing the first step that you do sets the tone for everything. So, in a practical way, the shofar blows on Yom Kippur, it's over. We're on the spiritual high after Ne'ilah, hopefully. Now, all of a sudden, you go home, you gotta eat. It's like a stark difference. 10 minutes ago, you're screaming, Hashem, Hu Elokim. Now you gotta sit down and eat. You have to become physical now. You're going from being a malach to being a person. So, I'm sure you all have come across, I mean, for ourselves, other people, who aren't so careful with brachas the whole year, but that first bracha after Yom Kippur is a doozy. It's said clearly with kavana. That's setting a tone. That doesn't mean you're going to be making brachas like that the rest of the year, but you're starting off this the right way. And hopefully, if you start off the right way, all you're doing is continuing. Because starting off is very, very important. And on the topic of Yom Kippur, if I digress a little, if we ask ourselves, the normal question before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. The Eitz Hara gets us to ask, why should I make any commitments to change? I didn't change at all. Maybe I did the first day, second day, but by day three, I was already starting back to get back to my normal habitual ways. Now here I am, the same schnook that I was a year ago. I didn't change, so why bother trying? That's the Yetzer Hara talking. So you have all the answers of what to do, how to get around that. The answer that I give myself is, don't look at what you are now. You're right, right now you're the same schnook. But now, think about last year. How many days after Yom Kippur did it take you to start becoming the same old schnook? Did it take you 5 days to start going back to your old ways? 6 days? So now, look at it this way. If last year was 5 days, make it 6 days this time. Just add on another day. If you do that every year of your life, it gets to 10, 20, it could be a month. You're growing on that momentum of every year. You're right, you could still be back the same way, but maybe it took a longer time to start the process of getting back to the same way. That's, I think, very important. We have to focus on the success after Yom Kippur. Until how long did it take until the mistake started to seep in? So I think what we're supposed to take from Baal Pa'ar in conclusion is, really, is we have to be aware of ourselves. Aware of ourselves means anything that I do to the best of our ability, you have to ask yourself or observe yourself and see, okay, if I do this, what could happen? Something good or something bad? Be aware of that and recognize that you need one standard hold on to, because you can never let yourself go the way of the Baal Pa'ar, which means no standards, no rules, no nothing. Because it could be a matter of physically life and death, or it could be spiritually life and death. If you make the wrong moves, the wrong decisions, you're heading in the wrong direction, you know, a slippery slope is usually a one-way direction. It's hard to climb it up. It's like trying to go up the down escalator. Focus that the ruchnius part of our life is the most important part. The gashmius is there to enhance it, to support it, not the other way around. And yes, if the people of the Dor Dea were able to make these mistakes, how much us can we make the same mistakes? So we just have to, I think, be aware and just be careful that when you're getting to a place, hold on to something or someone who can help you, give you guidance to help you on the right direction. Thank you so much for coming. Have a wonderful evening. Mir Tashem, next week we're on for Pinchas.
Thank you. Thank you.